Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. I'm Matt Cause. That's Bob Macko. It's Bob. How you doing?
I'm good today, Matt. I'm happy to be here. It's a sunny day. It's the beginning of March. It feels like we're at the end of the tunnel on a lot of levels. I know that's not true, and I know we can't get ahead of ourselves, but it's hard not to feel at least a little excited about the promise of something better.
Why can't we get ahead of ourselves? I'm so tired of everyone keep waiting, even though that's the correct thing. Can we just have one day when we're like, all right, everyone, good job. We're going to get through this real quick.
Yeah, Matt, I've looked at your Instagram feed. I think you've had a couple days that fit that bill.
Well, you know, to be fair, I'm doing virtual wine tasting events. I can't be there in person hobnobbing with other like-minded wine people. I'm doing it from my home.
Yeah, you are the real victim in all this. I've been looking at your Instagram feed, and it's funny. Because I know you, I don't hate it, or more specifically you. But did you see my last note to your table full of shellfish and bottles of wine? Did you see what I
wrote back? Yes, it was relatable.
Relatable! Exclamation point.
you weren't also having some scallops and duck prosciutto last night?
I did not, as a matter of fact. I probably could have, if I really chose to. I think, you know, Matt, you're a single guy with no kids and disposable income. If you can't enjoy your life, who can?
That's true. I'm doing the Lord's work here. And I was bringing joy, Bob. I was bringing joy last night to about 70, 80 people wanting to learn about Cabernet Sauvignon.
It's amazing to me how when you share your indulgences with others, you can convince yourself that you're doing it for them.
Yeah, well, you know, hey.
But all of us, right? Like when we watch 3 hours of hockey, instead of like helping our kids with their math homework, it's like, but the team needs me.
Clearly the Leafs don't need anyone, but yes. Bob, if you can't lie to yourself, how are you going to lie to others?
That's true. Well, there is actually a theory in cognitive science that says the reason we lie is so that in terms of like our evolutionary abilities to survive, we get good at lying, one, to acquire what we want, but also to train our brain to live with multiple levels of meaning so that when things are bad, we can lie to ourselves.
Oh.
And when you think about it, and you and I discussed this, the capacity to lie to yourself is an important survival skill because things aren't always great. And if you actually faced what they are, you know, one of the arguments I've heard about climate change is that people can't wrap their brains around it because it's just too big. Like you couldn't function if you did. So it's actually a survival skill, ironically, that keeps us from going, oh my God, the earth's on fire. We have to be able to rely to ourselves because you can't fix it. And you still got to make your way to Longo's today to pick up some, you know, scallops and duck prosciutto.
Yeah. Ooh, that would be a good combo. No. And like the thing of it is that if you were truly honest about everything, we would be in every human being would be in a corner in the, you know, tucked up shivering when it's like, you know, oh God, this has happened to me, but it doesn't matter. And in 9,000 days, I'll be dead and I won't exist again forever. That makes it difficult to make the trip to the grocery store. The same way, if we try to have the right level of empathy for every news story, we'd be doomed. You know, you see something about a mudslide killing 72 people. That should emotionally devastate you to the core. But if you let every one of those do it, you won't be able to function as a human being.
So here's my thought. I'm excited by this, that there is a level of our brain's wiring that is over time evolved to become eternal spring training. Could we make the playoffs? Logic says probably not, but there's always a chance. Is George Springer?
It's a good analogy. Guns?
Yes, he is. I want to actually get to the Jays in a little bit because it's a weird year for the Jays and maybe an exciting one and maybe not. But can we start off with the Leafs? And I don't know that there's tons to talk about except to say that this feels like the coronation of, at least in the regular season. Coronation is the wrong word because it assumes they've won something. But it's like almost like a philosophical coronation. Like people have been waiting for the team to play 60 minutes like it gives a shit and that defense matters. And that its best players are going to be its best players, and that there's going to be some notion of defensive responsibility on the part of the forwards. Like all these things that people prayed for years out of this club. The last three games against Edmonton, you're like, wait a minute. They were that team all along.
Are they like the rom-com teen movie where she takes her glasses off and she's hot? That's the Maple. It's like, oh, wait a minute. She was always attractive.
You know what? We're going to call this the they're all that episode of Mac and Cross.
Bob, yeah. I have a message for all of Canada.
Okay.
And that's get your shit together, Canadian hockey teams not named the Maple Leafs. You want to know why everyone wonders about this, about how good the North Division is? It's because Toronto is pantsing all of you so badly, except for Ottawa, that it's causing everyone else to wonder how good everyone else is. Like Montreal, stop firing all your coaches. Vancouver, younger players, get it together. You know, Edmonton, hey, McDavid, how about you put up some points every now and then? Come on, Canada, get your shit together.
So that's a really awesome way of looking at it because it puts Toronto at the top of the triangle. It makes us the apex predator where we belong.
Yep.
Which I love. So thank you for that.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny how the brain works, you know, almost like a police scanner looking for a signal. You know, once Edmonton felt like they'd been taken care of, I honestly, I started to look at Winnipeg's roster to go, are they underrated?
I know.
I just started looking for where's the threat. Hey, since we're doing neurology, there's actually something in cognitive behavioral therapy called attentional bias. And what it basically means is your brain is wired to perceive what the most dangerous thing in the vicinity is and to focus on that. And I feel like years of trauma with the Leafs have trained us all to have attentional bias. But honestly, they looked great. And not only did they looked great in a repeatable way. It wasn't like some kind of crazy heater that caused this. It wasn't like a goalie standing on his head. It was just, you know, TJ Brody's effect on the defense is really starting to be felt. And some of the players got a little better. Justin Hall didn't get worse. You know, I guess it's maybe not repeatable in the sense that you don't think Jimmy Vesey's going to score and maybe Ilya Mikheyev will never score again. But, you know, Jason Spezza is having a crazy good year in a weird sort of underlying numbers sort of way. But by and large, this was the way they were built to play. And they're kind of playing that way. Like, there's no reason to think they couldn't do this in a 7-game series against Tampa. And then, you know, it's a coin flip against a great team. Like, they are now truly one of the teams that could win.
Yes. And you said repeatable. Here's my word for you, Bob. Mm. Translatable. Okay. What have we seen from the Maple Leafs that will translate in the playoffs once they dust off all these loser Canadian teams and face real competition? And there's a couple things. Their defense is really good. What they did to Edmonton's top line, what they did to McDavid and Draisaitl, that's something that'll translate. Mix of veterans and young players hitting their prime, that will translate deep in the playoffs. Also, the fact that the gap between them and second place in the North is far better than anything else, than any of the three divisions, that is something that can translate because it shows that you have the potential to dominate. So right now you're scoring 5-on-5. We've got Austin Matthews. The Maple Leafs have a lot of things that will translate in deep in the playoffs.
That's a really good point because the gap between regular season success and playoff success can be pretty big depending on the style you play and the personnel you have. But they do feel, and that, you know, I used repeatable, but I think translatable is a better word Because at this point now, you're just trying to figure out, can this happen in the second and third rounds? You know, like, how deep can they go and still play this way? You know what occurred to me? This is not exactly a sidebar, but a bit of a diversion. That the North Division right now is like Saturday afternoon wrestling from back in the day. And by that, I mean, like, wrestling now, every Monday, they still have good matches. But it used to be Saturday afternoon, it was only good wrestlers against the worst, and they never lost. And it was just an ass kicking. You would go up against the good wrestler. You'd be Tito Santana versus Johnny Canine.
And Bob,
the other six teams in the North right now are basically Johnny Canine.
Oh yeah. They're Johnny Canine. They're Iron Mike Sharp. And right now the Toronto Maple Leafs are the Junkyard Dog.
And they're thumping their way through the North Division.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, before last night's game, before Brody had that beautiful play on McDavid, I wrote down just a couple things to throw out for today that were generally interesting me. And I'll give you the quick list. Okay, you ready?
Yep.
Brody, Matthews, the meh line. Do you want to talk about any of those? Or do we feel like after last night's game, we should just... Yeah, okay, what?
Well, let's do Brody, because the defense is great for a couple reasons. One is scheme. You know, obviously, odd man rushes, high danger chances, all those have gone down. And part of that is scheme. But part of it is also acquisition. Zach Bogosian on the bottom end, but TJ Brody is so much better than Tyson Barrie, who's on Edmonton. You know, that's another big reason. It's like, They just made a smart acquisition at the right time, and it's paying off.
I don't want to be that guy, but I will be. For years, we said, could you imagine if Morgan Rielly had a good partner? And now, watching Brody play, you start asking the exact reverse question, which is, how many of Riley's faults is Brody actually covering up?
Yeah.
I suppose that's the trade-off, because, you know, Rielly is an offense-first kind of player, and he's never been a defensive stalwart. But if only for this year, maybe that's just what they needed, was somebody who is defensively good enough to let Morgan Rielly be not defensively all that great. I mean, I can't complain about this team right now. In fact, there's kind of another hockey question I wanted to throw out with another cross sports analogy. Is there anything else you want to say about the Leafs? Because I kind of want to migrate this a little bit to last night's game, but in a different way. Any other Leaf talk you want to do?
No, a lot of this is stuff we talked about the last time. It's a fascinating thing. When you are this good and this much better than everyone else, there's actually less to talk about.
So last night, the Nets beat the Houston Rockets.
Yeah.
And that's not an especially exciting game, but for the narrative, which of course is the James Harden gets himself out of Houston and goes to Brooklyn, and now Brooklyn looks like the prohibitive favorite, certainly in the East, and maybe even all of basketball right now. So I'm watching that score, and I'm watching Brooklyn run up the score. And then at that same night in Edmonton, Connor McDavid and his team looks terrible against the Leafs for the third night in a row, or third game in a row. And it made me think, like, these are the two opposite ends of the how much loyalty does a athlete owe his team and his market, you know? Like, Harden bailed and became really just kind of gross in how he engineered his exit from Houston.
Yeah.
To the point where people are even asking, is the player empowerment era over? Because fans just can't go that far, you know? But then on the other hand, like, Connor McDavid, like, he's going to be the Mike Trout of hockey. Like, how much longer can he stay in Edmonton and that awful franchise that's had chance after chance after chance to get better? And again, he and Draisaitl, and then everybody else. Like, don't you just want Connor McDavid to say, fuck this. I'm the best, I'm the most gifted hockey player since Sidney Crosby, and maybe even going back to Mario, you know, just in terms of how dominant he could be. And I'm surrounded by bozos, and it's not good for the game. And I'm literally in the hinterland when it comes to the rest of the NHL. Like, he's in freaking Edmonton. That's fine if you've got Messier and Gretzky and Curry and everybody. But these days, it's a shit about Edmonton if you're in the rest of the NHL. and you've got the best player basically under lock and key on this garbage franchise. And don't you kind of want him to go a little James Harden? See, guys, get me the hell out of here. And if you can't do it quietly, I'm going to have to make you do it loudly.
Couple thoughts. First, this is what the Maple Leafs do to you, Bob. Remember when the three-game series was going to begin? Edmonton was the hottest team in the entire NHL. They were 4 points back. And now the Leafs have dummied them to the point that the Mike Trout conversation is coming out again. As for Connor McDavid, I think you give it one more year. You give it one more year, and then at that point, it's, you know, talking to the team and saying, listen, you're going to have to move me. As long as the only thing I don't want from Connor McDavid is, you know, A, going to travel to Vegas when the team is doing training camp or in the middle of a bleeping pandemic, and two, still try hard on the ice. As long as he doesn't commit the original sin, which is not trying hard, then I'm okay in a year from now if he starts asking for a trade.
And what if it's public? How would hockey handle that? Basketball fans have a certain threshold of acceptance for this. I think people have gotten more and more used to this idea over the years. It just doesn't happen in hockey all that often. And with somebody like Connor McDavid, you know, there's this weird sort of Sidney Crosby doing Tim Hortons kind of persona where we think like there's a personalityless sort of hockey bot thing that we like to thrust upon these guys. Don't you kind of want him to get the hell out of Edmonton? Because it would indicate that he doesn't want to be the kind of guy who retires with no rings. Like, at what point do you start to look at McDavid and say, are you satisfied with this?
Perfect scenario for me. I mean, you know, obviously I want the Leafs to win. Is he stays and they grow and he wins a championship there at Edmonton. As a sports fan, that's what I like to see the most. If it continues not to happen and they keep floundering, then yes, I want to see him go somewhere else because that'd be more interesting. But to your original question, I think the fans would be okay with it because I think you got to go individual case. I think the collective hockey community feels bad for Connor and we like making fun of Edmonton. I think we'd be fine with it.
Yeah, I remember Rick Nash. Rick Nash is not Connor McDavid. He wasn't that great. But there was a time when he was the best goal scorer in the league and he was in Columbus. And people felt bad for him because he was locked up with this team. And then there was this weird conversation that started to creep in, which was, well, why wouldn't he want to go play for a better team? You know, eventually he wound up in New York, so it's not like he was afraid of big markets. But there's a weird thing that happens where if a great player doesn't win after a certain point in their career, we cease to see them as a great player. We see them as talented. We remember them as part of a generation. But there's a weird thing that happens, and it's like this invisible line that gets crossed. And I think that line has moved up because everything has moved up in today's day and age, whereby even a kid who comes into the league and sets it on fire as early as he did, at some point people are going to look to him and say, maybe he's the kind of guy who's just satisfied with this. And there's nothing worse than thinking a guy is just satisfied. This is all probably very unfair. There's probably any number of people could listen to this and say, wow, that is like, that's not even a hot take. That's a stupid take. Except for this. When was the last time you sat around a bar and talked about how amazing Mike Trout was? You love baseball. Yeah. Like baseball is in your blood. You love it almost as much as you love football. Your dad for years covered it. Your dad scored games. Like it is in your blood. When is the last time you talked about Mike Trout the same way you sit around with your buddies and talk about Patrick Mahomes or the same way you talk about even Austin freaking Matthews? You know, like you just don't talk about him, right?
Yeah, no, the conversation with Mike Trout is always, it's less about, like we start by saying he's the best player in baseball, but then 3 seconds in, all we do is say we feel bad for him. Mm-hmm. You know, and we make fun of the Albert Pujols contract and everything else that's gone on with the Anaheim Angels of Los Angeles of California.
The one thing we never want to admit to ourselves about Chris Bosh when he looked so happy to be on the stage with LeBron and Dwayne Wade, because we felt jilted. He totally did the right thing. He got the hell out of Dodge when the organization was still a mess and was churning out like, you know, there was just not much hope he was going to have a Hall of Fame career in Toronto. He did the right thing. We didn't like it at the time, but now you can look back at it and say, wow, look how much the organization improved since then. If you did it today, you'd go, I don't know what's up with that. Like when Lou Williams bolted out of town and started throwing darts or Kawhi or whatever, you could legitimately say, well, you walked out of a really great situation. So, but Chris Bosh did not. And Chris Bosh went on to win a couple titles, and he's going to be in the Hall of Fame. And if he stays in Toronto, maybe none of that happens.
If he if he stays healthy, well, the blood clot thing is the huge one. If that never happens, I think he probably gets in the Hall of Fame. But does he win championships? No, probably not. Going to Miami, going to that organization, and with LeBron and Wade, yeah, it was the best thing for his career.
And even though he wound up the third guy, he wound up the third guy in an amazing situation. So anyway, that's all I'm saying is, like, I look at this whole Connor McDavid thing, and I don't want to turn this into, like, a blame the victim. But if a guy doesn't get angry about people pissing his career away, at some point you go, maybe you should be at least a little angry.
Well, I guess the pushback is that maybe he just doesn't exhibit it on the ice, and maybe him staying there is actually the ultimate form of narcissism and ego, where he thinks, no, I'm me. I can make it work here, even in Edmonton, where there's been so many bad moves made by this organization.
I don't know what happens in that guy's life or with his team or within the team, but I would have to believe at some level, somebody's had a conversation with the top Oilers brass saying, you're going to fix this, right?
Yeah.
And with that kind of long, sinister glance that says, because we know what comes next, right? If you don't.
I feel it's a year away. I think it's another year away. But if they keep losing, the amount of those columns are going to come out. And eventually, every day, Connor's going to be asked about it. Like, are you happy here? And they always code it. But the longer it goes on, you know, we drop all pretense. And it's just, you still want to be in Edmonton? You know, like eventually we'll get to those questions.
I was listening to some reporter after the game talk to Leon Draisaitl and basically ask him, how did it feel not contributing for three games? Are you mad at yourself? I'm distilling the question down, but that was the gist of it. And that's really what got me kind of fired up about this, because I thought, wow, like, I don't know if that guy's seen any of the other games over the last couple of years, but it's basically been those two guys and everybody else.
I felt bad for the reporter. You know, you do it on Zoom. It's such a weird environment. And it wasn't a great question. But, you know, the team just got dummied three straight games, and that line gave you nothing. You have to ask the question. You're just trying to figure out what's the best way to ask the question.
Yeah, I guess.
You know, it can't be, hey, Leon, how come you guys have sucked over the last three games?
I kind of took that into my own sort of hobby horse. Do you got anything you want to get to this week? Any early thoughts of the week or just what are you working on for today? What do you got, Kaz?
Well, today it actually, I've had a hard time with a couple of the opening thoughts. My opening thought today is going to be the translatable one, but it's also now going to be me yelling at the rest of Canada for making the Canadian division not as exciting. So I'm basically going to go over every city and yell at them for being a bunch of losers, because let's face it, no one wants to fully give the Leafs credit. So the way you do it is you just rip the North for being extra weak. And I understand the skepticism because of what the Leafs have done or not done in the playoffs, but the attacking of the North division to me feels like a sneak attack on the Maple Leafs.
You know what this kind of suggests is actual empirical evidence that this whole Canada loves Canada hockey is kind of bullshit. Like, wouldn't you, like, for me, I would go, well, I'm always excited when the Leafs play the Habs, and I'm always excited when they play the Sens, because there's historical rivalry, and then at least in terms of the Canadian teams, I'm of the age where the Sens and the Leafs had major battles in those Pat Quinn years. So they were one of my, you know, early teams that I learned to hate. But everything sort of east, or everything west of us, you know, they're playing the Flames. Okay. You know, they're playing the Canucks. I miss them playing Tampa, and I miss them playing Boston. I miss them playing Buffalo. I miss them playing Washington. Teams where there's actually recent past, you know?
Yeah, well, what this comes down to is we all like to think we're fine just eating a Cinnabon breakfast, lunch, and dinner. But every now and then, you need a salad, you know? And listen, when it's Canada on Canada, it's great. When it's always just Canada on Canada, eventually the novelty is going to wear off. You know, and you need those other teams there just to make you more excited about when the Canadian team comes back. It's like, all right, this is a really crude analogy that I'm going to do. Hugh Grant, gorgeous man, top of his powers, was with Elizabeth Hurley, a very attractive woman. And then he was caught with like a hooker in a bad part of L.A. or something like that. I'm trying to remember the story. And you think to yourself, my God, every night you went home to Elizabeth Hurley. And it's somewhere in his wiring, he just wanted something different. I think maybe that's the same way when the Leafs are, and part of it is because the Leafs are dominating everyone else, but eventually you just want something different.
So I'm going to push back against the premise of your comparison.
Good.
I actually think that most of the games against other Canadian teams are not the Liz Hurley in your comparison. I think we actually don't nearly care as much as the CBC or Sportsnet would like to convince us we do when Toronto plays other teams. I mean, the Sens and the Habs for sure, but everybody else, I think it's just a much bigger deal when we play Boston. I think it's a much bigger deal when we play certainly Boston and Tampa. And this idea that there's, like, when was the last time, you know, I think it was probably when Calgary was in the Cup final, that there was, you know, and there was all this sort of Red Mile talk where it felt like Canadians got excited about Canadian teams that weren't necessarily their own. I couldn't care less about any other Canadian team doing well. Like, it's the Leafs or nobody.
My pushback to that is, what if Edmonton or Montreal, Vancouver, one of these teams, what if they were just as red hot against the Maple Leafs? And they were trading back and forth, and one team was winning, then the other team was winning, the other team was, you know, going back and forth. Would that make it more interesting versus what we have right now with the Leafs just killing everyone?
Yes, but I think that has more to do with two good teams that are going back and forth than geography. Like, what you described, I would like, but I would also like it if it was Buffalo. Mm-hmm. And it's not because it's Winnipeg or because it's Calgary and they're Canadian that gets me excited. It's, I want to see the Leafs tested against the best. And if there's push and pull and it feels like a heavyweight fight, that's inherently exciting. But I think the sort of guardians, the custodians of the game here in the country are trying to convince us that we look at this as a nationwide thing, when in actual fact, hockey is incredibly regional.
Yeah, no, I can totally see that. You do like pushing against that Canadiana hockey narrative. I blame George.
a lot of people do.
But yes, we there is certainly as much marketing as there is actual sports fandom when it comes to how we're supposed to perceive a Canada versus Canada game.
I'd be curious to see like what the all Canadian team numbers are like. I guess it's skewed because you have two markets then that are watching, like on a Wednesday night hockey game or a Saturday night hockey game, like how much the numbers go up. But then you kind of have two big markets that are then all of a sudden connected to the game directly. So of course they would be bigger.
Yeah.
Of course they would be, but that doesn't mean people outside of those two markets would necessarily care more. There's a lot of times on a Saturday night where like the, you know, I mean, in previous years, where the Habs and Sens will be playing, it's not like I feel like I've got to flip over to keep an eye on that game because it matters to me.
No. Oh, no. The only time I flip over is if, like, say, like, Carey Price has allowed 5 goals and they've kept him on the ice. You know, basically, I'm only flipping over for sports schadenfreude.
I have a trade for the Raptors that I'd like to propose. I sent you a text the other day to the NBA trade machine.
Yep.
And I think it just, if you even opened it, I think it just comes up generically like the trade machine and not necessarily the one that I successfully executed.
But yeah, no, it did. It just came up generic.
Okay. So I came up, so sad, but last night I just sat there on the trade machine thinking, what could we get back for Lowry if it happened? Philly was almost impossible just because of the cap numbers. Mm-hmm. But Miami was interesting. So do you want to hear my trade?
Yes.
It was Lowry and Davis to Miami.
Yep.
And in return was Dragic, Myers Leonard, and Duncan Robinson. The trade was accepted. The cap numbers worked. It was +3 wins for Miami, -3 for Toronto. But also Myers Leonard, he's got a team option next year. And so basically, if he's back, they want him. They can keep him as some depth at center. But really, the essence of the deal was Dragic for an extra year and then a shot at signing Duncan Robinson long term. And when you give up Lowry and Davis, who's never going to be part of the future plans anyway, but it's like if you had to lose Lowry, I don't know if Miami would do that, although the trade machine suggests that they would get better in the short term. And you could easily see how a Lowry Butler Adebayo core could do some damage. What do you think?
I don't think Miami does it, and it's nothing against Lowry. Does make them better, obviously. But healthy Goran Dragic is often the second best player for the Heat. As for Toronto, I mean, all this really is about getting rid of Lowry or trading Lowry is, can you get a young asset? So when you said that whole deal, to me, that just made me think of Duncan Robinson, who,
that's really,
you know,
what the deal is for.
What's
that's
that?
Really what the deal is for, is to get him, because he's a young scoring shooting guard.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who shoots above 42% from three. Isn't much defensively, doesn't really move the ball great, but he can score and he shoots.
I do that. I would do that deal just in the sense of it gives you a chance of getting a young asset who could grow to be a better player.
And, you know, they have Tyler Hero there. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what they think about him, but in the finals last year, he kind of looked like the guy who could be a meaningful piece for you. I'm not saying that there's no value for a Duncan Robinson. He goes as his shot goes, but if you're going to lose Lowry anyway, you got to get something back.
Yeah. And the thing is, if you trade him to one of these contenders and you get back draft picks, that's great. But the draft picks are going to be in the mid-20s. You know, you're not getting one of those high-end picks.
Well, that's it. So I started to play in my mind with the idea of, okay, so Fred, Robinson, OG, somebody at the four, and Karl Anthony Towns. As I started to fantasize about my future Raptors, I'm like, I like that team. I like that team.
Hey, I still like your Karl Anthony Towns. You know, that's the guy that the Raptors have got to go after. I'm still a fan of that idea.
Did you throw it out there?
I threw it out there.
And what did people say?
You got a lot of, okay. I would say that's what you got, which is a good level. You got a good level.
Okay. So people didn't dismiss it out of hand.
No. They didn't dismiss it. And that moment of, okay, I can see where you're going there. So, you know, you didn't have 100% buy-in, but, you know, you still had, you still ended with a positive approval rating.
Okay. Well, I'll take it.
Yeah, I would take
in,
that as well.
In this economy, I'll take it. What else has got you going these days, Kaz? Or are you just on like a Leafs turkey high? Like, you got the tryptophan buzz after the big win.
And this can be a hard thing to talk about just because who I work for. But I'm bummed out that that the Blue Jays are not having a dedicated radio broadcast for a couple reasons. One, baseball works best. Radio works best. Baseball works best on radio of all the sports. And we know that. Two, it just makes this whole city feel a little minor league and cheap. And finally, when you eliminate that, what you're also doing is eliminating jobs and opportunities and internships for younger people. And it's something in my industry I'm always cognizant of, you know, how do we help get the next generation of people in? And by not having that, that's bummed me out. Like, in fact, in my mind, that's the biggest story with the Blue Jays, because we kind of know all the storylines with this team. They should be exciting, very good, and we're concerned about the pitching. But the fact that there's no dedicated radio broadcast kind of bums me out.
I'm so there with you, and I don't work for TSN anymore. I'm just a fan, and so ironic choice of words. But I love baseball on the radio. Love, love, love. And especially I found that I could get into a nice rhythm in the summer evenings where I would do my writing with the game on. And it's just this lovely kind of background narrative that you're in and out of. And it's just such a beautiful way. Like, it's almost like a scented candle for your ears. Like, it's just really a great way to fill a room with something really pleasant. And I was watching a spring training game the other day, trying to imagine how that call would sound on radio. And it was awful because there's so much information that you don't give on TV because there are visual cues. Like, you know, you bring up someone's stats line, you don't need to say it.
Yeah.
When you think about the great broadcasters we've had doing radio over the years, they do a great job of resetting the table and, you know, at the top, you know, it's just, it's different and it's better for the medium. Really, really sad. And I kind of feel like it's the beginning of the death of the media that we know. Well, not the beginning, but another nail in the coffin of the media we know.
So, I mean, you know, about the Jays, we could talk about George Springer and, you know, how they're going to use Nate Pearson and Vlad Guerrero Jr. has lost all this weight and hopefully this is his year. Like, there's a lot of legitimate stuff. And, like, I think you could be very excited about the Blue Jays this year. Tampa has taken a hit. There isn't one single dominant team in the AL East. So, you know, there's a lot to be excited about. We can also make fun of Major League Baseball and their next round of CBA arguments. But, yeah, the first thing for me was just not having the radio presence out there.
I couldn't agree more. And I'm going to go even further with this. The baseball app, the At-Bat app, where, mm-hmm. which gives you access to all the out-of-town radio calls, it's a joy because there's a bunch of teams that have really great broadcasters. And every single night for years, I would listen to Vin Scully late at night.
Yeah.
He's obviously gone now. But regardless.
He's alive. He's alive. He's just retired. Yes. Just retired.
Yes, he's retired. Yes. But it's an example of how that voice, like, I think that if you grew up in Toronto, even if you were a marginal sports fan, Tom and Jerry was the soundtrack to your evening.
Yeah.
Part of the sound that we grew up with. How many games did you listen to on the radio, Matt?
Oh, a ton. Like, even just like driving in the car, you know, as a kid going up to the cottage or something, you know, you had the baseball on.
So that's just something. It's a layer of personality. A market unique personality that's just been stripped away.
Yeah.
You know, Tom and Jerry were Toronto. They didn't belong to anybody else. They didn't even feel like they belonged to MLB. They belonged to the team and they belonged to us. And as we move more and more towards the Disneyfication of media and everything becomes, you know, this sort of blob that comes out of the Borg and everything's designed to feel like a McDonald's where the franchise never changes no matter what city you're in. By the way, that's my first,
that is your first, my first 40 minutes in and that's your first.
That's pretty good. It's a good thing. I was picking up a head of steam anyway. I was going to start sounding like Leon Trotsky again.
You mean you were going to talk about duck prosciutto?
Yeah. How are you and I friends?
That's my thing on, that was my first thought on the Jays. My second thing is I love with baseball where the fans, the media, the players, the owners, there's two things they would love: universal DH and, expanded playoffs. And it's not going to happen because they don't want to give it up because of negotiations. Everyone wants it, but we can't have it.
I'm going to throw out a topic for you, Matt, because we're on the topic of the times they are changing.
Yep.
And I know this is going to set off old man cause, so I'm just going to get comfy, okay?
All right.
Did you know that tomorrow, Friday, March the 5th, the new Kings of Leon record is coming out? When You See Yourself, uh-huh. The 8th studio album by the Kings of Leon.
Okay. And
you will be able to purchase it on cryptocurrency.
Mm.
How do you feel? Oh, here we go. How do you feel about the idea of now having to use cryptocurrency? I mean, you have other options, but it's only a matter of time before every big company has its own currency, the same way you have loyalty points now. How do you feel that in your lifetime, you're going to have to use some form of crypto?
I don't like it at all. A, I don't fully understand it. B, when you have a conversation about Bitcoin, I just nod my head and I say, uh-huh, at what I feel are the appropriate moments to make a grunting noise, like I understand what the fuck's going on in the conversation. I hate it. I like the idea of you always have a little money in your wallet. You always got some cash, you know, and I feel bad for the homeless, you know, like people have less money to give out. Also, just like tips and things like that. You know what this comes down to? There is something to me important about the tangible element of money, because when it's tangible, then usually you're a little more careful about spending it, or at the very least, you understand the value of it when you're holding it in your hand. When it's this imaginary Bitcoin cryptocurrency, then it doesn't feel as real.
That's all true. And you're on a head of steam, so I'm just going to keep the fire going. Because I'm pretty sure that, you know, you still have... Oh, wow. Nope. A lot of calls coming in. I'm pretty sure that you only sort of know who Kings of Leon are. So the idea that you would use, like, cryptocurrency to buy one of their records is the most foreign thing to your life ever. How would you feel about signing up to a big business like an Apple or an Amazon? I understand that Amazon's actually exploring its own currency right now. Would you use it? Because you have been able to avoid all forms of tech, Matt. You still have your BlackBerry. You still have cassettes in the car. But money is to avoid. So would you do it? Or would you drop out of society?
Bob, okay, first off, I no longer have a BlackBerry. I don't have cassettes in my car, but certainly I was one of the last of everyone I knew that still used cassettes. So, you know, the joke still lands. But no, I don't have an Amazon account. The only thing I've ever ordered online is wine. And that's because I'm supporting local wineries and local wine consignment. I still don't do any of those things. I'm hiding from this, Bob. I'm afraid. I'm like a soldier in World War I. I'm stuck in the trenches, and I don't want to put my head up because I might get shot by Jeff Bezos and his crazy cryptocurrency, the Bezolian.
You sound like a soldier who is, like, going back to World War II in that analogy. You actually sound like one of those soldiers who gets trapped on an island and doesn't know the war is over.
Yes,
and
the Japanese soldiers on the islands throughout the Pacific who were unaware that for decades that the world war was over. That's me.
I saw this story and I thought, oh, I wouldn't do that. And it wasn't long till I thought, oh, Matt wouldn't do that. Matt would not do that. I find I'm not obsessed with trying to stay young. It's not interesting, but I don't want to get old either.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure that I don't want to get old now. the story kind of makes me think, you know, that whole Bob Dylan song, you know, something's happening, but you don't know what it is. Do you, Mr. Jones? It might be time to Mr. Jones this a little bit.
I just want to be able to function well enough. I don't need to be on the avant-garde or the cutting edge. I just need to be able to get by, you know, so I'll learn new things here or there. And, you know, I'll still plod along. It's just let's slow down. Let's slow everything down a little bit. How about that?
You know who I feel really bad for right now?
Mm.
People in their mid 30s. Here's why.
All right.
So I work with people right now who are like in their 20s and 30s. And they generally have respect for my opinion, but it is always framed this way. We really respect your experience.
Oh, no.
Which is kind of code for you're old, but you're not stupid. You have no idea what's going on in the real world around us, but you've been there before, so we can't totally discount you. And as you know, like, it used to be that you could work to retirement. And your job didn't change that much. You could kind of keep up with what was going. And your experience was actually valuable on the job site. And in our lifetime, that's less true. The way things are changing, when you get to your late 40s and early 50s, things are moving pretty fast. And if you haven't come up with the new tech, you got to make an extra effort. And generally, people who are young think you're stupid because they have come up with it. And what they see as second nature, you have to struggle to do. And they think you're dumb. That's today. The people who are 35 right now, 15 years down the road, the young people coming in are going to eat them. They're going to kill them and eat them in the lunchroom because they will have no regard for them whatsoever.
Now, the bitter part of me wants to say to all the young people that know all the stuff that I don't know, well, I have home ownership, but I was able to purchase when it wasn't obscenely expensive right now, where I legitimately actually feel bad for the younger generation. But if I'm going to be bitter, I'm like, well, at least I own a place.
Yeah. Yeah. You're going to have that. And they're going to say, yeah, but what do I care? I live wherever I want.
Hey, come back. Why aren't you trying to live near me, but failing? Come back.
I watch a lot of Japanese anime with my daughter, and there's always like a wily trickster old guy character who's clearly me, you know, in all of these things. And he's got gray hair and he's got kind of a paunch underneath of his robe, but like when it's time to fight, all of a sudden he busts out these wicked moves and he can kick pretty much anybody's ass. I've decided that's who I want to be. I want to be the wily old mentor that can still kick ass.
Yes. That is perfect. Because you know what? There's nothing worse. And I know we got to end the pod soon. There's nothing worse than like 45 to 55 year old guy who still knows every celebrity and every Real Housewife. And they know what's going on with celebrity beefs and you know, like 28 year old musicians. And just they know like and they still try to wear the hip clothes and whatever. It's like, listen, there's something unseemly when you're 48. It's not that you got to get ready for your grave, but you shouldn't be hanging out on TikTok all the time either.
You know what the line that I crossed is? Like, and I won't cross? Clubhouse. New social media app, people are all into it. And from a business perspective, I'm very interested because there's a subscription-based model that I find really fascinating. It's a move away from the ad-driven model. Just as an intellectual exercise, I'm really interested in this. You know what I'm not interested in? Meeting anyone in Clubhouse. I've been asked to join a couple times, and I thought, like, for what? So we can sit around and chat?
No. I should get in a Clubhouse, Bob.
You know what? You could start a good wine room, actually. Mm-hmm. See, but that's different because you're your own brand now, Matt. You're Matt Cause, sports wine guy. See, you could benefit from all this stuff.
Yeah.
But I'm just a guy who raises his kids and, you know, consults people and helps them make stuff. I don't need that.
Yeah, but then I'd have to try to promote myself and do all that and ugh.
I offered to manage you once. You said no.
Yeah. You know, it would be a whole to-do, and you've got, I'd feel guilty. Like, you got things to do. You got children to raise. Last thing you need to do is drum up support for the sports arm.
Well, yeah, you know, Matt, by the way, that was my phrase. Or was it? Or did I just say it was
good? Amy.
It was
no,
Amy.
Amy came up with it first, and she got angry because I would never use it.
Right, and then I heard it, and I'm like, you're an idiot, and Amy's right.
Yeah.
So, like, classic move. I heard it and assumed I must have said it. sorry, Amy. You know, it's for a cut. It's for 10%. It's not a favor.
That's true.
You know, so don't feel bad. You're such a nice guy, though. Like you wouldn't want to put anybody out. You're so funny, Matt. You're like the sweetest, nicest guy. See, that's why we're friends. Because you're the nicest guy.
Who just happens to post, you know, pictures of his scallops and duck prosciutto with his wine pairing.
Hey, you know what I wanted to say just before we wrap up here?
Yeah.
The NBA is so weird this year. Because the NBA, it's not like we have a North Division that Toronto's in and we're only playing certain teams. Like, you know, we still see the whole NBA rolling in and rolling out. So I've been able to keep track of the league with more interest this year. And Miami's doing 500 business. Boston's doing 500 business. All these teams that you thought, oh, like dark horse candidate to win a title here. And it feels like there's this weird malaise that just hangs over the league this year. I wonder if the players are unhappy. Do you ever wonder that? Like, I know they're rich and I know they're young and I know they're living it up, but their lives must be so weird. And I wonder if they're just unhappy playing because there's so many weird things going on.
Oh, yeah. At the very least, and people get angry when you suggest that players are unhappy. How can they be unhappy? They make this amount of money, da 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 da. But at the very least, malaise, massive disruption. These people that for all their lives are all about routine. Now their routines, like the constant checks, constant, you know, COVID testing. Don't go here. Don't go there. just all these things. And especially these are young people who now have to suddenly adjust to a completely different life, like all of us. But they have, like, their disruption is even more than the average person. The only difference, obviously, it's a big difference, they still get lots and lots of money. But yeah, like, their lives have certainly been uprooted. So you can understand why there's some malaise going on.
There's been a lot of talk on Twitter in particular about the foolishness of trying to have an all-star game this year because there's increased health risk to it. And I guess objectively speaking, that's true. I can kind of understand it. But I wonder if some of these people talk to people who actually live in and work in the States right now. It's a free-for-all. Like, I don't know that the NBA all-star game is any more dangerous than walking down to get milk in the morning. You know, Texas has just lifted basically all of its mask laws. It's open for business. Here we go. I don't really, do you understand the vitriol against the all-star game this year? I don't.
I think it's just, it feels unnecessary. Like, just bringing everyone together in the same geographical spot. You know, I feel it's, and also it's people. And remember, this is Twitter. So it's not real life. It's, you know, 25% of the population. Right. I think people view it as just a greedy money play when, you know, the money going to the league is, yeah, it's going to help the rich people, but it's also going to help all the other employees. So I never get upset by the greed factor.
Well, I understand it, the criticism, but this one, I actually don't see the argument for it, except in the most sort of abstracted way, you know, like, of all the things you could get upset about, this one feels like it's not that big, you know, even to the
point.
I'm listening to how, you know, maybe it's a blessing in disguise that none of the Raptors made it. I don't think that's true. I would have loved it if Pascal would have made it. It would have meant that he was one of the 15 best players in the East.
Yeah. Or Fred. Yeah. Do you want me to tell you what I'm most upset about with the All-Star game?
Please.
Before I do, just a quick note. This podcast, our sponsor is our lawyer, Jeff Pollock. If you need a lawyer, jeffpollock.com. That's jeffpollock.com, Jeff with a G, 416-777-0088, 416-777-0088. Fantastic small law firm. You can't go wrong going with Jeff Pollock. How many people in the dunk contest can you name?
None.
There you go.
None. The dunk contest, I was watching some Vince highlights the other day just because somebody put them out on Twitter and, you know, they were on, so I watched. And I was laughing myself because I didn't go, even though I was in San Francisco at the time. I left the arena to do a little shopping because I wanted to come back and watch the rookie game.
Oh, no.
Did you not know that?
No.
I was at that All-Star game, and I actually was in the arena and left before the dunk contest started because I was too cool for school to care about dunks. I really wanted to watch the rookie game, so I picked to do a little bit of shopping around San Francisco during the dunk contest. And when I came back, it was like someone had lit a brush fire. Like, there was this excitement in the building. People couldn't stop chattering about what they'd seen. You know that moment where you look and you go, oh, I fucked this up, didn't I? Like, even before asking, I knew, oh my God, it was amazing. And of course it was. It was like legendary. Yeah, I chose not to be there, Matt.
Jesus, Bob, we've got like a minute left on the podcast. And now's the time you drop that story that you left the Vince dunk contest to go save some money at Marshall's.
Yeah, you want to know what? I went to City Lights bookstore. R.I.P. Sterling Getty. I went and I bought a book. Actually, I can even tell you what book I bought.
Can I guess?
I bought, sure.
Rush Limbaugh autobiography.
That's the one. Love that guy. No, it was Charles Dickens' Great Expectations, and I gave it to Tim Chisholm, who was Rick Chisholm's kid and was along with the trip, and he wound up doing a lot of stuff with the Raptors. He was a great kid, and he was getting into theater, and so I always made a point of buying that book for young people because I thought it was a good thing for young people to read. So I went out to buy a book by Dickens instead of watching the Vince dunk contest.
Unbelievable. If we had more time, I would yell at you more. But I missed the Jose Bautista bat flip game because I was at a wine tasting.
Is that true? Who's his worst?
Save it for another
next week.
Save it for another. We'll save it for the next podcast, Bob. Which one's worse?
Yeah. Okay. Well, me and my ringer will be there.
Bye, Bob.
Bye, Matt.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.